This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hello, everybody. I'm back. Toni Quest with the Energy Stoners Cafe, and I'm glad you came to join us again. And of course, I have to suggest that you get a beverage, whether it be coffee, tea, wine, whatever you like, and sit back and relax. Today, I have a great guest. Her name is Jeanette O'Kelly Miller. She is a very interesting person in that she actually, I've known her for a few years, and she knows how to sort of push the envelope in a very good way. And I'm going to interview her tonight about a virtual exhibit that she curated for African American History Month. But it's interesting to me because it is very historical, and I see the exhibit itself, having viewed it a couple of times, as being somewhat timeless, even though it really depicts a certain period of time in American history. But there's something about this exhibit that when you look at it again, you see something else in it. And the name of the exhibit is 19th Century Stereotypes versus 19th Century Reality. And it's an exhibit of art during that period. I see it as the seed of stereotypes for African Americans and people of color, and also the seed of racism, but it also is the seed, I see, of the emergence of the African American artist. And I'm going to talk to Jeanette about this, and I'll let her explain exactly what it is. So Jeanette, welcome to the show. I'm so happy that you're here.
Oh, thank you, Toni. Thank you so much for having me.
And I know that with this exhibit, you worked with Mara Mills, who is someone that I respect very, very much. So two people that I really adore doing this fabulous exhibit. And tell the audience how you got involved with Mara Mills, who's a stage director.
Well, the long story short is I first met Mara few years ago, just by chance. I went to what we now know as the Hudson Valley Museum of Contemporary Art to see an art exhibition that was going on there. I believe it was in 2017. And I got to meet Mara at that point, and just we synced just in terms of I was just amazed at her energy and her passion and her eye. And since then, you know, we kept in touch, and I actually was able to work with her first on a project last year that she started that you also did, Climbing the Walls.
Yes.
And a friend of mine who I partner with, Patricia Lee Stoddard, who is a musician and composer, producer, we did a work for that, for Climbing the Walls. And just with this particular piece, with 19th century stereotypes versus 19th century reality, initially that was a school project that I had produced, you know, that I curated, I narrated and did the research for it. And just before the beginning of February, actually, Mara and Patty and I are working on another project right now. And I asked Mara if she had anything on schedule for Studio Theater in Exile for African American Black History Month, and I sent her this presentation. I had it actually in a different, you know, in a different social media platform. And one of her miracle workers was able to, Jeremy, he was able to put it into the platform that you see, you know, with the three rooms. He separated because it was originally one video, and he was able to separate them into the three different videos. So with the room one, room two, and room three.
So I noticed that each room has like almost like a different purpose. And even though they are separate rooms and they're separate videos, I guess, in a sense, it does flow. And I'm not going to say too much, but I was very fascinated to learn from this exhibit that Caucasian white artists would depict Black life. And they seem to do it like very eloquently, but in the same sense, there are subtle elements of racism. I'm using that word, even though you don't use that word in your title, stereotypes within their work. And you did talk about that. Tell the audience the kind of things that you discovered as you did your research for this, as you curated it.
For me, one of my biggest research interest is the power of sight, how we see, and how that frames how we view others and view ourselves. Specifically, just as a tangent, my research right now is currently focused on how negative racist stereotypes impact not only African Americans, but also the other indigenous people in America, including the Native Americans and Chicanos. And in terms of doing the research, I wanted, you know, what I began to see was we have these ingrained ideas that were given to us that we learned, you know, we were socialized with from our parents, you know, our uncles, aunts, grandparents, about how life is supposed to be, what is considered good, what's considered beautiful, and, you know, what's considered ugly or wrong, and, you know, how we should consider those people over there and what their value is or whether or not they have no value. And visually, you could see how, well, in this country, that terms of using slavery and enslaving people, trying to hold on to power and for economic reasons, visually, stereotypes to use to help give credibility to people of color being inferior or in terms of being treated in the way that how chattel slavery was so brutal, that it was okay or appropriate for them to be treated that way because as people, they were subhuman. They weren't considered, you know, we weren't considered to truly be fully human. You can see that both in high and low art, like you referenced in terms of some of the paintings and even the illustrations. They're, you know, are exquisitely done, but there is that, like you said, there is that subtle, you know, inculcation, you know, just in terms of saying, yes, this is the position that they should be in. And, you know, I thank you for saying that it's timeless, or because I wanted this to be, you know, to bring about discussion, because these images actually impact how we think today.
Yes.
You know, just in terms of what you consider a person's place, or specifically for African Americans, you could say, oh, you know, we're looked at them as nurturers, or, you know, as long as we're involved in physical things, sports and whatnot. But the moment we move into, take, for example, our former president, President Barack Obama, to be in a position of authority and leadership, that can turn people's heads around. You know, they turn into the exorcist. What, you know, that was.
I should laugh, but it's true. It's true. The fear.
Yes, yes. And you know, just in terms of how with sight and with place, those two concepts are really, you know, are things that I really like to focus in on, because you can say, for instance, there's the first painting in the first room, Accepted Stereotypes, is by a painter by the name of Samuel Jennings, and it's entitled Liberty Displaying the Arts and Sciences. And it was known at the time, it was celebrated because it was the first painting to really focus on the Emancipation Proclamation and African Americans being freed. But what, just in terms of when you look at the imagery of it, you know, I won't go into all the details here, but just to say that the fragmentation of the formerly enslaved individuals that appear in the painting in the lower corner, they're, you know, you don't see their whole bodies. It's, you see their upper bodies, and they're in a position of submission. You know, it gives you the thought comes to you of the powerlessness that they have.
Yeah.
You know, as a painter, you know, I know you know this, as an artist, we know that the body can symbolize wholeness and power. And when you have fragmented or only part, when we show or we portray only parts of bodies, then that can denote, you know, a whole lot of different things. But specifically here, there is a lack of power.
And it's interesting also that you kind of did a transition into the next room, which depicts African-Americans or Black people a little bit different. It starts to evolve into something else until you get to the third. Explain to the audience, like, the transition from the first room to the second to the third, and how, what each gallery actually represents, even though it's the whole exhibit is cohesive in itself. But each room depicts a certain part. It actually evolves into something that I saw as, okay, now we're approaching reality.
Yeah.
But there's some things in there where it's not totally accepted at that point because we're still in the 19th century. So explain what your thinking was as you compiled this art, because I think that you did a brilliant job.
Thank you. As you said, we hear it in the title, 19th Century Stereotypes versus 19th Century Reality. And Room 1, Accepted Stereotypes, focused on what the accepted stereotypes, what the popular stereotypes were of African Americans during the 1800s, just how we were portrayed, not only in print, but also some people would not, think of it, like you were saying, in fine art, just in terms of painting, and even in sculptures, just to, that message. And coming into the last two rooms, into Room 2, I wanted to juxtapose what the stereotype or the stereotypical image of African-Americans were during that period and how African-Americans really did look, you know, just regular everyday people.
Real people.
Exactly. And this came, the title for Room 2 is Du Bois, Real People. And that's, of course, W.E.B. Du Bois, the sociologist. And back in 1900, he had an exhibition in Paris, and it was purposefully to show how African Americans of during that period really were living and what type of lives they had, to counter what the popular imagery was, the stereotypes of African Americans at that time, the negative images. So even in Room 2, I actually highlight four Black photographers who were active during that time. And most often, you know, everyone knows of James Van Der Zee, who's phenomenal, but the photographers used here, James Presley Ball and Thomas Askew, you know, they also were phenomenal in terms of their work. They were businessmen as well as being artists, and they were also worked as abolitionists as well, specifically James Presley Ball. And the images that are used here, the photographs, they're not so much of people like celebrities of the time, but, you know, as I said before, everyday people. And specifically W.E.B. Du Bois, his book that the images are taken from, were from people who were living in Atlanta, Georgia. So I just in terms of for context, wanted to give, for background.
I think it's the history is just very fascinating. People don't know the names. A lot of people don't know the names. What I found really striking was the subtleties. And like you were talking about the posture of someone, I know going just fast forward into the 20th century, I know I went to an exhibit of someone's art who produced a book about the Middle Passage. And so this artist was an African-American artist. And the posturing in that, when you see it, was more, I digress a little bit just to sort of make a point. The posture of the images that he rendered of the people that were on the slave ship, it was interesting that it was more not so ready to submit so quickly. And I have that book somewhere. I have to break it out and show it around a little bit more. But that's the thing that fascinated me about that particular book, because it was overt to me. And even though there were slave masters in these pictures doing things to them, the posturing was different. It wasn't as submissive as I really noticed very subtly in the images in your exhibit that you chose.
What I appreciate in terms of what you just shared is that is why it's so important. And I think, you know, there is more momentum now where the phrase slave is not, or slaves are, isn't being used. Those two phrases are being discontinued and they're being replaced by enslaved people, because the people, like you were saying, their posture was not one of immediate docile submission.
Right.
These were individuals who were, you know, they were trapped, they were tortured and whatnot, but they were not immediately, you know, just in terms of being submissive and going along with how they were being treated.
I think a lot of it is because people don't realize who these enslaved people were before they became enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to get into great detail about, because it kind of dilutes what your exhibit's about in terms of this interview, but not every person that became enslaved started out that way.
Exactly. No, exactly. Please say it, because that's the truth. And it, you know, and even coming into the third room, real people's fine decorative and folk creations, that's to show the type of work that was being produced by African Americans in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it wasn't just simple pieces that could be thrown together, but very intricate, detailed work.
Right. The inherent talent was there and the skill was there. I think that it's remarkable that you were able to find all of this stuff. I mean, maybe I should know that it's available readily, but how did you go about finding the work and choosing it?
Well, research. And I know you like to research too. But
yes.
Well, I tell you, the library is my second home. Just in terms of finding, I'm continuing to increase my library, I have to say. My husband is a little upset with me, but I have just books that either I may take them out from the library and then I'll end up buying them and adding them to my own collection. But there, you know, you will see images either that will catch your eye. And so when you research who is the artist and where is that from, we do our due diligence. We find that, you know, you find the images there and you go, you know, museums and get the catalogs. And so it's a variety of resources.
It seems to me, having known you for a while, that you just have this curatorial streak in you, because when we met, it was with the Fellowship of Reconciliation in NIAC.
Yes.
Tell me about that evolution, your personal, professional evolution, because I find it fascinating. And I think the audience might be inspired by your journey.
I have to say, my talent blessing is to serve, is to help. And I'm, you know, I'm able, whether I'm teaching or acting. When my 20s, I was able to act and dance on Broadway. And whatever I do, though, it's for service. It's to bring about that communion where the audience can be provoked or challenged or inspired. And coming at Fellowship of Reconciliation, you know, it's just one of those rather ordinary stories where you got to have a job so you can eat. And I saw the position on a non-for-profit job website. And thankfully, when I first went for my interview, I fell in love, because at that time, we were based in this mansion right on the Hudson River.
I remember it was magnificent.
when I walked in the front door, the back, one of the back doors was open right to the river, so I could just see straight through. And I said, oh, I want to work here. And thankfully, you know, it worked out. But just one of the things I was able to bring in or combine my love for the visual arts while there. It was there that I started teaching. I first started teaching at Nyack College, an African-American art history course. But our executive director at the time, the late Mark Johnson, he was very much into art. And just in terms of having fundraisers that could, you know, help our, you know, the organization, Fellowship of Reconciliation. And also, you know, we wanted to support local artists in the community, that I was able to curate two art shows there. And that's how I got to meet.
You got to meet me. Yes, I got to meet you. The honor was mine. And I was getting impressed about how people find you. How do people find you? You know, it's like, I'm like, how did she find me? I remember it very, very clearly. It was something, it was really quite extraordinary. You know, the kind of presentations that you would put on over there.
I loved working there. And I know you felt it. We just, everyone, the staff there and the people who had come in, not only the staff, but because it was based, I mean, Fellowship of Reconciliation is the oldest social justice, peace and social justice organization in the United States.
Oh, see, that I did not know. See, you just taught me something else. And I was there. I didn't know that.
It's wonderful. Just the history of, that particular work. They had a wonderful book interview just a week ago about one of the founders. Well, not founders, but gentleman George Hauser, who was extremely instrumental in pushing forth the work of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. And the book is entitled Ubuntu. But, you know, just the people that would come in, it's not, you know, not only the staff, but also the various members from around the United States, because we were based where we were. It was the national organization, but there are local chapters in each state. And then there's also an international Fellowship of Reconciliation as well. So, you know, just our doors were always open to wonderful, you know, minds and hearts. So it was a great place.
They were very lucky to have you there.
I was lucky to be there. I was blessed to be there, I have to say.
I think your passion definitely contributed to who they are.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
No, I'm just saying that sincerely, because I can tell you personally, you know, just having been on the planet for several years myself, is that often like the people that are sort of come in from outside of a situation are the ones that give it so much flavor.
I hear you.
And you were just so passionate about it. And that place was just so... There's just something about the vibe in there, a lot of spirit, good spirit in there.
Yes.
So what are you working on now? Like, what's your next project going to be?
Well, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but Mara and Patricia Lee Stoddard, my friend and partner, we're working on a project as we speak. I believe it'll be on the schedule for the early fall or late fall of this year. And beyond that, just more writing. And if an acting project comes up, I'm open for that. Even though I had moved away from it, I have done some acting projects lately. And in fact, a second project that I did with Patty, that actually was included my acting as well. So seeing what doors are open.
You have a nice cohesive package is what you have. No, really, acting, writing, they seem to go hand in hand. So as far as acting, tell me just going back, I'm kind of looping back and forth because I'm discovering things about you as we talk. So you mentioned it earlier in the interview that you were a Broadway performer.
Actually, I was worked on it or in for Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough on Broadway. And I also did the national tour for the, you know, for the show as well.
Nice.
And then when I returned, I did some work there at the Public Theater when Joseph Papp was the producer. So just in terms of working there. So, yeah.
Well, you just dropped a couple of names. Joseph Papp.
That, well, he was phenomenal.
Now, you have an outstanding career. I'm like just so impressed with it. So the next thing you're going to do, it sounds like you're going to be doing sort of like what a lot of artists and artistic people do, is you go into this sort of semi-hermit mode and you start to write. Is that what you're saying? Is that what I heard?
Well, you know what? Yes and no, because it's true. When we write, we have to have a place of solitude so we can, you know, be filled and also, you know, just to gather our thoughts and throw them up in the air, let them come down, stir them up again. But no, in terms of, you know, their work goes on. So I do have a day job and, you know, I continue with that because that helps, thankfully, to keep us out of debt. So I'm very thankful for that. But in terms of writing, when I see different, I guess you could say, different projects or conferences that will come up, or if there's a magazine that, you know, they're because I actually had submitted work not long ago for a magazine that's going to be published later this year.
Did I see that? Did I see that article? I feel like I saw something you wrote.
Well, it hasn't come out yet. With fingers, toes, and eyes crossed, my submission will be accepted.
Oh, I look forward to it and talking to you about that with my audience, too.
Well, you know, we can't just rest on our laurels. So I'm actually getting ready to submit, you know, for another project as well. You know, we working artists, we do what we have to do.
Yes, we do. You know, because it doesn't do itself. You know, I say it that way. Someone's got to push the button. So how can someone actually see the exhibit, you know, 19th century stereotypes versus 19th century reality? How can someone actually view this exhibit? Is it still available?
Oh, yes. Even though it was specifically for Black History Month, Mara has been extended through the rest of this month.
Oh, good.
It will be up until the end of March. And you can view it at their website. The name of the theater is Studio Theater in Exile. The website is studiotheaterinexile.com. You can go to Climbing the Wall.
So you go to Studio Theater in Exile.
.com.
Then go to Climbing the Walls.
After climbing the walls, you'll be given a choice of continuing into seeing what the work was for Climbing the Walls for last year, or you can go into my project. It'll say if you want to view Jonette's project, 19th Century Stereotypes versus 19th Century Reality.
Great. Okay, so that's Jonette O'Kelly Miller. Jonette O'Kelly Miller, and the show is called 19th Century Stereotypes versus 19th Century Reality. And I say, be there or be square. No, it's a place to go. It's really an extraordinary exhibit. And, you know, first you'll go in and say, oh, yeah, art. But then as you start to look at it more, you'll see the depth of her selection and the depth of the stereotypes and how deeply these seeds were planted. I think it's a must see. That's what I would say.
Thank you so much, Toni.
No, thank you for coming and talking about this. It's a beautiful exhibit. I enjoy it very much. I've looked at it maybe two or three times, and it's amazing how, you know, an artist that could be white to depict somebody, a Black life or lifestyle, and to see how they really got it wrong about us, as beautiful as a painting might look. And I appreciate the fact that you did not hold back as you went to room two and you saw the kind of stereotypes that we're used to seeing, which are, I'll say, highly offensive. But nevertheless, it's somebody's art. And then going on to room three, to show how African Americans will depict themselves and how we view ourselves and how we really are. That's the reality. And I thank you. Jonette, is there anything else that you want to tell the audience about this show and yourself before we close?
Only that, you know, thank you much for giving me this platform, and that, you know, it's not to shame or to point fingers at anyone or any people group. It's for the purpose of engendering conversation.
Yes.
So that we can see the reality of all of our humanity.
Yes, that's, I like the, all of our humanity. And I think that anybody that sees this show will say that, wow, I never knew. Or some people will look at it and say, finally, somebody's telling the truth about what really went on then. And it's interesting that the artists, as artists, we really kind of know inherently. It's good to be able to express it with a paintbrush or a sculpting tool, or to be able to do a performance. So again, just tell the audience one more time, Johnette, the URL for where they can see your show.
StudioTheaterInExile.com. Then you click on Climbing the Walls, and that will take you to my particular exhibition.
Yes, it'll take you there. I want the audience to know that this is a must-see exhibit. And it's a kind of exhibit that if I had children, I would just sit down and watch this exhibit with them. No matter what color you are, no matter where you're from, it's just something that we should know. And I thank you so much, Johnette, for putting this collection of work together. It really is the beginning of when, I want to say, certain things started to happen. The 19th century in America was a very significant century, because it's the century in which the slaves were supposedly freed. And the art tells the real story. The art will always tell you the real story from the inside going out. I'm going to say goodnight, even though I don't want to, but we'll talk again, because you're still moving. You're still doing things, Johnette. But I'll say goodnight for now to you and to the audience. I thank everybody for coming to listen to this show. It's a very important show. And go to see this exhibit by Johnette O'Kelly Miller, 19th Century Stereotypes versus 19th Century Reality.
Thank you, Tony.
My pleasure. So goodnight. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.